This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Our next guest, who's going to be here with us for a little longer than normal, because I want to start with something that is absolutely the antithesis of what he does. Ben Rothenberg has been joining us on and off for about 3 or 4 years on this station. He is the tennis writer for the New York Times in Australia for the Australian Open. Welcome back to Australia.
Thanks for having me, Pete.
So you're slightly less sunburned, I think, than when we saw you last time.
last time I was here, I was out in qualifying, and it was one of these overcast, cloudy days, and I thought that I would be fine, but... Alas,
nope. we have a giant hole in our ozone.
Slip, slap, slap.
You're probably here at the right time, given the inauguration of Donald Trump in the United States. How do you feel as with him as your president-elect?
I am happy to be a world away from that. I can more or less, if I try, I can shut it off and pretend like it's not happening. Eventually, in theory, I'll need to confront the reality of it. I live in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So he is a new neighbor, I guess. Although it's not even clear he's going to move into the White House full time.
I don't believe Melania and the son are moving into the White House. I think they're staying in New York City.
Yeah. Which is apparently costing a lot of money for security up there in terms of having all the Secret Service have to run around Manhattan with them. I mean, I understand from a child-rearing perspective, wanting to keep a kid in school for the school year, but just even before this, they apparently cost like Manhattan.
Hasn't done those Obama girls badly, has it? They're quite well adjusted.
People move all the time, surely. Yeah. Move a kid.
It's not the 50s and the 60s. So America is in a very interesting place, and we do take quite an interest from afar. So it's and the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is, I think, the highest civilian honor from the president awarded to Joe Biden yesterday. There's a really nice bromance between Obama and Biden, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. They do seem to get along pretty well. And I think a lot of people are sort of savoring that camaraderie and air of good feeling, whatever you want to call it, between the two of them a lot more as people see the uglier 2016 campaign on all sides, in a lot of ways, that just got nasty and very fraternal, whatever you want to call it. It was a pleasant time. And yeah, certainly in the days after the election, there were a lot of great Joe and Barack memes
there's a whole account of all of these Biden-Obama interactions, and they're absolutely hysterical. I love watching. It's a nice self when you're having to listen to an Oompa Loompa speak on the television. It's a really lovely self.
And one of the things, for you, Ben, as a journalist, and you're a sports writer, there's a lot of things that the media picks on, I suppose, with Trump. That's kind of easy to do with his appearance, his views, his tiny hands, the wig, whatever.
His tiny hands.
But how do you see the reporting of Trump and particularly his really combative relationship with the press?
It's a love-hate relationship with the press, because he bashes the press constantly, obviously, but he's also obsessed with getting covered and does nothing but watch cable news TV all day from what the reports are, and just loves, bash CNN, but will also go on CNN or call into CNN frequently, or at least used to during the campaign. And same thing with the New York Times, same thing with the other outlets, Fox News. At times he's been, even though they're the most sympathetic to him, he has been at times critical of them, but then also willing to call in at certain times and talk. So he likes having it both ways. And it's a very easy refrain for him, I think, once he sort of heard from the Democrat or the left side about the sort of fake news problem. He adapted phrase himself and started shouting that CNN was fake news or something, which CNN has its issues. I'm sure, like every other outlet, but I don't think fake news in all caps is a fair descriptor. That's one of the things that worries me about him also, just all the all caps. It doesn't seem particularly adult.
No, I don't think he seems particularly adult. Ben's going to stick with us, of course, to take us through this wonderful Australian summer of tennis. So we might sneak off early to some messages. Kathy, I have been called a snob by one of our listeners.
Oh, over La La Land?
Over La La Land. I'm a snob, apparently. And clearly I like a more intellectual film.
It's got to be all about personal preference.
Just the way it is.
And I think that's, you know, we have to kind of probably leave it at that. But, you know, I mean, you were full flight with your...
With my vitriol.
you were, but...
Another message. The Obama family, and this is something, Ben, I think you'll pick up on. The Obama family epitomises how education and intellect can produce such a fine family that's been scandal-free. It was a privilege to see a black president be elected in a world leader in my lifetime. I think there are many of us who are going to look back on that 8 years of his presidency with a great deal of affection. I mean, it hasn't been plain sailing. He hasn't always done the right thing. I think we're going to see a post... Trump's inauguration, we're going to see a lot come out about things that Obama is alleged to have done. Some of those are not going to be nice, but I think it's something that we'll look back on in a very favourable light in comparison to how we look back on the 2 terms of W. Bush, for example, which was, you know, scary to say the least. I think this will be scarier. Ben Rothenberg is here. He is the New York Times tennis writer. We love having him back. And I wanted to start with the women's draw first.
Sure.
I think let's have a look at the challenge that Serena Williams is going to face in her first round with Belinda Bencic. She's an up-and-coming player. Just before we get to Serena, Jo Konta. She beat Agnieszka Radwanska in the Sydney International, one of the lead-up tournaments yesterday. She made the semis here 12 months ago. For those who are not familiar with Jo Konta, she is an Australian-born tennis player. She lives in Britain, has been playing for Britain for, I think, since 2012. Played semifinals at the Oz Open last year, and she's clearly in some really good form again.
Yeah, no, I think Konta's rise sort of perplexes people because with most tennis stars, and she's not quite in that sort of stratosphere yet, but she's solidly into the top 10 now. There's a very clear sort of, you know, hype process and a very clear sort of pipeline where you see them coming as a junior and they get sort of built up and people say, oh, there's going to be a next big player. And Konta sort of avoided all that, which is amazing because she came from two very tennis mad countries in Australia and Britain, which she now represents. And they do so much tennis coverage between them that it's odd that somebody could have more or less slipped through the cracks and just not been talked about in a serious way as a possible contender to do anything close to top 10. I mean, she'd been outside the top 150 for a long time up until summer of 2015.
Do we know where the change came from?
It seems it's a testament to tennis and how small the margins can be. It seems to be at first a small difference in just sort of mental toughness and confidence and belief and self-assuredness out there, and that can sort of spiral in a good way into wins.
Could there be an influence from Andy Murray on her game and in tennis in Britain in general?
Certainly he's a positive model to have to base yourself after, and she has a great work ethic, which is something he's known for as well, and a lot of professionalism. She's not quite like him personality-wise, and he's a little more interesting than her probably most of the time, but she's absolutely a very, very professional, very hard worker, and has had this amazing ability to just sort of be very coachable and say, someone says, do this and you'll win, and she's able to do it with no glitches. And normally the sort of human side of tennis players always cracks through, but for her, she's not show much humanity in a good way yet.
She's got a tough first round against Kirsten Flipkens, who I think is a Belgian.
That's right.
Number 73, thereabouts.
Sounds plausible,
good. So that's a tough first round for her. But given that she's knocked off people in the top 10 in this last week, including the Canadian Bouchard, not unreasonable to think that Konta could do well.
The first round is not bad against Flipkens. She's got a couple tough ones after that, which she's got Naomi Osaka in the second round, who's a very talented Japanese player who's half Haitian, half Japanese, grew up in the U.S., so she's sort of a citizen of the world type, and she's got a big game, and people think she is somebody who's the opposite of Konta, is getting a lot of hype. Mm-hmm. She's 19, but everyone's already sort of grooming her to be a next big thing. And then I think she could play Wozniacki third round, which is also
going to be tough.
And then Serena in the quarterfinals potentially after that. So,
well, Serena's going to get past Bencic in the first round, exactly. which is interesting.
Yeah. So that's a loaded section for sure.
Sam Stosur up against another Brit, Heather Watson, in her first round. Can she win that, do you think?
That one, yeah, sure. I mean, Sam, she can win, she can lose. I mean, Sam sort of, everything's on the table for her when it comes to the Australian Open. She's had a lot of, obviously, disappointing results here compared to her results, say, in the U.S., in the U.S. Open. Just everything seems to weigh a little bit heavier on her, and she's still, you'd think, you would hope at some point, especially at her age, she's into her 30s now, that she would have just said, you know, everyone kind of expects me to lose, so there shouldn't be any pressure, but she still puts so much pressure on herself and just has this tightness that just you can see, and it's just uncomfortable to watch at certain points when she gets put in one of those night session matches in the first couple nights. You can see the stakes just fear so much, and she's never fully been able to exhale the way she does in Paris and in New York pretty regularly.
Yeah, it's such a shame, I think, for Sam. I mean, we as a country, I think, put so much pressure on her as well. I think, you know, like you say, it would be nice if she was able to just say, well, let's, you know, let's take it casual. But, you know, it does seem that she, and she has such a poor record here at home.
And our other seeded Aussie is Dasha Gavrilova. She's got a bit of a simpler first round.
I think she does. Gavrilova is seeded for the first time. She made a good run here, being unseeded last year, and pulled off a big win against Kvitova, I think, second round, and really sort of is a newer Aussie than obviously came from Russia, and that might have been her first time playing the Australian Open under the Australian flag, I want to say, last year. Yeah. And so she got her pep and her spunk really warmed over the crowd pretty quickly, and so I expect her to be widely received, and she is probably on the women's side for sure. The surest bet to make waves. The other person I don't know if you're going to mention is Destiny Ayava.
Oh my God, I love this girl. Have you seen her?
Who is 16 years old and is has a very powerful game. She's the first, if you want to feel old, she's the first player ever born in the year 2000 to play in a Grand Slam main draw.
That does make me feel
So everyone pretty much feels that way. It's a milestone. Everyone sort of cringes at, but she's a very charming girl. She won a match in the main draw of Brisbane, which is sort of her big splash. I'm not sure who she has first time, but she's the one in the pipeline for Australia that people are excited about here.
She's of, I think, Sri Lankan or Indian heritage.
I think she's Maori, actually.
Oh, is she? Maybe that's it. So that's looking good. Let's talk about Serena. Has she got it? Can she win? Is she distracted?
I don't know if she's distracted. She hasn't played much lately, so she's certainly undercooked, if you'll say that. And with this, maybe this tough opening that she has in these first two rounds, she plays Belinda Bencic, who's a great player, was number 7 in the world as of last February and had a lot of injury problems. And so that's a very tough first round for both of them, more for Bencic. And then gets Lucy Safarova, who she played in the French Open final in 2015 in the second round, possibly. So that's tough, but she'll know that she has to be on her game early, and that might serve to kick her into gear better, because I was in Auckland with her a couple weeks ago, and she was very lethargic and just frustrated and not dialed in some pretty windy, frustrating conditions out there, and she just refused to adjust. And I think that she'll know she has to be better than that here.
Ben, have you got a prediction for for who'll be holding the women's trophy?
The one who I'm really high on is Karolina Pliskova.
Okay.
She's number 5 seed, and made the US Open final last year. She's got a good draw, and she's just playing incredibly well. She won Brisbane. She's a big, tall, lanky girl. Not a very fast mover, sort of like a Lindsay Davenport type mold of just being a big person who stands in the center of the court and wallops
Smacks
the ball. Exactly.
and
that model works. She's an incredibly good, consistent ball striker, and I think she more or less controls her own destiny. And she's one of the few people who I would ever put, if Serena gets to the semis where they would play, who I would put at sort of a coin flip with her.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move across to the men's game. Andy Murray seeded number 1 because, of course, the world number 1. Some interesting draws for world number 2 Novak Djokovic to start with. He's up against Fernando Verdasco.
Yeah.
Not going to be an easy hit up, but if he gets across there, the rest of the draw looks a little... kind of.
No, that was the one draw that made people sort of burst out laughing when it came out. Was Verdasco starting against, Djokovic starting against Verdasco, who he had just played in Doha in Qatar a couple weeks ago and had 5 match points against him. And Verdasco is known for being a terrible closer in his career. He's had a lot of close calls and wasn't able to finish the job there, but he's beaten it all in the first round here last year. So he's a dangerous guy who has shown the ability to pull off upsets. So Djokovic, I think people think it's the favorite, but that could be a somewhat... haunting matchup to see so quickly right away there. But after that, it more or less clears up for Djokovic, and he should be pretty steady. I mean, he's just been so automatic in Melbourne over the years. He's won this tournament 6 times.
Yeah.
Now, I believe, and it's been his place. And if it's yet another Djokovic-Murray final in Melbourne, which I am admittedly completely sick of seeing those two play in the final here at this point, because Djokovic won all of them. Mostly haven't been that good.
It'll sell tickets.
Yeah, it'll sell tickets, I guess. But it's more interesting, though, because Murray's coming in as number one this time.
Yes, correct.
And with some confidence, even though Djokovic beat him in Qatar. It'll be a little bit of a new twist to that relatively stale rivalry.
I think the biggest challenge to both those boys is Milos Raonic, the Canadian. He's got an interesting first round against Dustin Brown, who I think is German.
Yes.
A man who wears this great thing on his head with all of his dreadlocks.
Yeah, he's Jamaican-German. He used to represent Jamaica and switched to Germany at some point. He's a sort of classic Bob Marley type, Rasta looking type, with the long, must be very heavy dreads.
Yeah, because
they go down to his butt just about, and they're incredibly long. So his photographers love him because they fly all over the place when he's playing and stuff. So he makes for some pretty good photos. He doesn't have the kind of game, I don't think, that can disrupt
Raonic is just such a cannon.
Yeah, he's very machine-like. So Raonic is in the same quarter as Nadal. I think that's a possible quarterfinal, and that could be a good test for Rafa. Rafa hasn't made deep runs at Grand Slams lately at all.
Well, Rafa and Federer, if you look at them, they're seated, I think, 17 and
9. No, Federer has been out, so he's 17. It's the lowest he's ever been at a Grand Slam. He's over in the Murray section. He could play. He's got a very early, easy start. He plays two qualifiers to start, and then he could play Thomas Berdych in the third round, which is someone
he's
done
well against. Him.
Not a great third round, but not the worst either. And then Nishikori fourth, and then Murray quarterfinal. So things will get
Federer's got some
him.
Work to do.
He's got some work to do, but he's certainly capable of beating any of those three. All three in a row might prove taxing.
Yes, indeed. Especially if they go long.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about some Aussies. Sorry, Ben Rothenberg is our guest. He is the tennis writer for the New York Times, here for the Oz Open. Let's start with a couple of the bad boys of Australian tennis. We'll start with Kyrgios. He's seeded number 14. He's playing Gustavo Ilias from Portugal, who I don't really know anything about.
It's not a player you necessarily need to know much about. I mean, he's a sort of solid top 100 player, doesn't do too much that's particularly noteworthy or spectacular. It's a very easy opening for Kyrgios. I think Kyrgios can fairly already have his sights trained on his fourth round match, which is against Stan Wawrinka. Although the issue with Kyrgios that I've heard, and I haven't gotten to see him play too much, is that he's had injury concerns. So if he pulls up hurt again, and his conditioning and his sort of prep for that has been questioned at times in his career. He got hurt at the US Open last year, for example, when he had been doing well by all other accounts, and that just sort of derailed him. So we'll see what he can do there. But Wawrinka is obviously the player who he had his big dust up with in Canada a couple years ago, and saying things
got rather nasty.
Got went below the belt pretty quickly from Nick. So if those two were to meet at a Grand Slam for the first time since then, especially in Australia with all the media market here and everyone being very familiar with Nick, that could be quite the blockbuster match.
Professional anything a man, not boys, stop buying into the dominant culture that infantilizes. I don't know quite what that's referring to, but that's a message from somebody. Bernard Tomic, seeded 27. Tomas Bellucci from Brazil in his first round. Should be easy enough. Although there was I saw an interview with Tomic last night. He's lost about 5 kilos in the last week.
Yeah. I think the tabloids are finding creative ways to call him fat, basically, is what's happening now. And there was one that I think one writer, I think from The Age, referred to him lovingly as the incredible shrinking Bernard Tomic. Because he doesn't need to be revealing all these things that he does. Bernard, you know, saying he's going on some like binge diet before the Open and lost 5 kilos in 8 days, something like that. And that's not normal. It's not like you're, you know, a wrestler needs to cut weight to make the grade. Usually in tennis, they don't have weigh-in.
Or a jockey.
No, so it's something odd. And Tomic just sort of says, and I'm sure we'll continue to say things. I think he's doing his press conference later today at Melbourne Park that just sort of get headlines and, you know, saying...
Might be having a bit of from Kyrgios.
He was asked earlier this month if he could describe his sort of... his career or something in, you know, three words, and he chose set for life. So exactly show the sort of
I love that little bit of arrogance about Tomic.
I mean, it's just a little bit.
Now some of the other Aussies, Jordan Thompson to watch, he's up against Susan from Spain. John Millman up against Stroff from Germany.
Those are both winnable for both of them,
James Duckworth against Paolo Lorenzi from Italy, also winnable.
Also winnable, sure.
And Sam Groth, I think he's got a tougher ask against Paul-Henri Mathieu, who's in good form, and Groth
has had a really bad 2016. He just forgot what he does out there, and he's a very sort of unique serve-based game that he does certain things very well and certain things not well at all. And for a while, he'd figured out the pattern of how to make that work, and then he seemed to sort of forget last year.
You talked a lot about, you know, this is a winnable match. This is an easy run. I mean, yeah. upsets happen so often.
Sure.
As a you know, as an experienced tennis journalist, how do you pick it? Like, and if it's going to happen in the Oz Open, where's it going to happen, do you reckon?
For anyone. I think the one to watch for first, right out of the bat, obviously, is Serena with Bencic. That's the one that could sort of disrupt things very quickly. And then Pliskova, who's my pick for the whole tournament, she could lose her second round. She plays Monica Niculescu, who's a very weird sort of junk balling player. And those are, I mean, you can sort of flag things, but also you have to prepare for the unexpected and know that you can just sort of, they say, like, you know, highlight the whole thing and delete and start over whatever story you're writing, and just know that you have to be able to work on the fly like that, and know that the unexpected is part of the fun, I guess.
For those wanting the perv game in the first round in the men's, Fabio Fognini against Feliciano Lopez, it's just worth watching. It's as simple as that. They're both good players. They're quite different styles. So it's if you're purely after the perv factor for the men's tennis, that is the game to be watching. Do you have a prediction for the men's? Is it Murray? Is it Raonic?
Perv factor or otherwise?
Raonic, Murray, or Djokovic?
I would pick Djokovic just because, again, he's been so solid here.
That makes me very happy, Ben. You know that.
Murray wouldn't be a bad pick at all. I don't think. I mean, Murray's in top seed, and he's been steadier the last 6 months. Djokovic has more question marks about it. He's taken some weird losses second half of last year. But I think he's still the guy. I think
Raonic is the potential upset here.
Just from a
reporting point of view, do you have to call him Sir Murray?
There's been debate about that.
He's been knighted to Andy.
I am not part of the Commonwealth in the U.S. I do not feel obligated to follow such things. You guys never, you know, entirely, you still have, you know, flag in the corner of yours. So I'm not sure if you guys are different. But while I'll say for us, no. I might say it mockingly.
Yeah.
But not earnestly, no. Yeah.
Ben, good to see you. We'll have you back during the course of the Open, we're grateful that you've been able to make it back in and preview the season with us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.